Shmos, Tavshin, Ayin, Dalad, we're in Perek Gimel.
Right over here, Bruce, grab one from right over here.
It says, Moshe Rabbeinu saw the sneh. He saw that the sneh was burning. There was a burning bush right in front of him. Let me turn and see what's going on here. Why is the sneh now burning? God saw that he had turned to go look at it. He called out to him from the sneh. Moshe, Moshe, he said, Moshe, Moshe, and he said, here I am. Al tikrav halom, do not come any closer. Shalom alecha me'al raglecha, take your shoes off your feet. Made a love the land that you are standing on, admas kodeshu. It is a land of kedusha. So therefore, take your shoes off your feet. Now, the Gemara Brachos, Samafes, they say that we learn from this pasuk that it is forbidden to spit on harabayas. You are not allowed to spit when you get to harabayas. Kal v'chomer from the fact that a shoe can't be worn in a holy place. If you can't wear a shoe in a holy place, kol chicane, you can't spit. That would be a bizayin to the place, so you're not allowed to spit. Says the Torah to Mima. This is obvious where we learn that you can't wear shoes in the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't say anywhere that you're not allowed to wear shoes in the Beis HaMikdash. We derive it from this pasuk. We take from here that you can't do other things in the Beis HaMikdash, like spitting, but this is where we get that you're not allowed to just wear shoes in the area of Har HaBayis in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the question is, what about shoals? And considering we're in a shoal right now, we're all wearing shoes, it's kind of a question that we've already answered. Well, Birkas Kohanim obviously is a little bit different, right? The reason we don't take off our shoes, the reason we leave our shoes on, explains the Rambam in Perush Mishnayos, is that back then, by the Beis HaMikdash, they would take off their shoes, or why they would at the time, I'm sorry, is that typically their shoes would be filled with mud and garbage and anything else they might have stepped in. They probably smelled pretty raunchy, I would assume, which meant that they took off their shoes before they came to shul, so it wouldn't be disgusting, muddy shoes sitting in the middle of shul and inside holy places and everything like that. Now, in the Beis HaMikdash, there was an added problem. You couldn't serve in the Beis HaMikdash wearing shoes because you had to have your feet touching the ground. You couldn't have a chatzitza in between you and the ground. I'm sorry? They had to wash their feet because of that, right? They had to keep them clean. Sifra Hasidim says, even though you can walk in shoals with your shoes on, and that's what we do nowadays, you should check them beforehand to make sure they're not disgusting. That you didn't step in any dog do, and back then cow do, or whatever it was that they might have stepped in back then. You got to make sure and clean them if you can. This makes a lot of sense why you wouldn't wear shoes on Yom Kippur. Because in Yom Kippur, when you're supposed to be like angels, all white and clean and pristine and everything, you shouldn't wear shoes so you wouldn't be disgusting. Now I know, wait a second, if you don't wear shoes, then your feet are going to be disgusting from the mud in the streets. It would make sense, though, that since it was Yom Kippur, it was before the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael, that their feet at best would have been dusty at this time. So maybe the shoes would have been disgusting, but their feet would have been still okay. The Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah, Perek Hay, said it depends on the minhag of the area if you can daven without shoes. If the minhag of the area is to walk barefoot, and that's how they do it, then you're allowed to go ahead and walk barefoot. Says that the honor used to be that the way they walked in front of kings is that you took off your shoes. That was to show honor to the king, to show them that this is what I have. Eventually that became, instead of the shoes, it became taking off their hat. That's what it became, says the Rambam, and that's what was adopted by all the European countries, and therefore for us it would be forbidden to daven barefoot. There's a whole thing in the Chassam Sofer about this, but that's that.
So why do we daven with that?
I'm sorry?
Why do we daven with that?
We should.
No.
Oh, why do we daven with that? To not be like them. To not be like them. That they're doing this as some sort of like whatever you want to call it. We don't want to act like they do, so therephore we took off our hats. I'm sorry?
Self-question.
Obviously, cell phones shouldn't be allowed.
Because our leaders take selfies of each other, of themselves.
Of themselves? These are selfies. Oh, that's what you're talking about. Get out of here, dude. This is going to be so outdated. Somebody's going to listen to the show in here and be like, what's a selfie? Oh, that 2013 phrase that they used to use. That's right. So outdated. Okay, now I'm not talking about this. No, next. Shal ne'alecho me'al reglecha. Take your shoes off your feet. You know, where else are you going to take your shoes off of? Well, what are you going to do? Take your shoes off where? I mean, obviously they're off your feet. Why does the Torah have to say Me'al Raglecha? Says the Das the Kanim. Gloves and mittens are also called Na'alayim. Although they're not called that way nowadays, I think mittens are Kfafot. And gloves, what are gloves? Uh-huh. They're also klopot. So Adi, that there are na'alayim, that are also known as mittens and gloves to the dafikanim. That's what Boaz used to make a kinyan with Ploni and Rus. Remember the whole deal? He took off his shoe and he gave it over to Ploni and they made a deal with the shoe, they made a kinyan with the shoe. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. But they did. They picked up the shoe and they made a deal with the shoe. It wasn't a shoe, it was a glove. That's what they were doing, says the dafikanim. And that's what all these people did. They all got around this stuff. They take that right over there. That's the reason why. The Panach Raza says the reason it was a makom kadosh. Why was it such a holy place? Well, it was a thorn bush, right? There were thorns all over the place. They had never used this area before. This area was untouched by humans ever. There was nothing tame that was there, which is why it was such a holy place. What were you going to say?
Where was the burning bush?
Har Sinai. Which is the Harasneh, right? That's Har Sinai.
Not
Har Amaria, not anything like that. It was Har Sinai. That is that. The simple way of looking at these psukim is that Moshe was told, don't come any closer until you take off your shoes. Because if you come any closer, then you're in a makom kadosh, and then you'll have to take off your shoes. Right? That's the idea behind it. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says differently, though, and this is the fourth paragraph over here. There were two separate commands. Number one, don't come any closer at all. Even without your shoes. Do not walk any closer to the sneh. You don't want to come any closer to this. That's number one. Number two, take off your shoes. Why take off your shoes? Since the land that you're already standing on is kadosh. So two laws over here. Number one, don't come any closer. And even if you do come any closer, I don't care, don't come any closer at all, but take off your shoes right now because the land you're on is kadosh. Now, wait a second. Why would you do it that order? Shouldn't you do it the opposite order? First say, take off your shoes because you're standing on holy land. Then say, don't come any closer. Because the land that's even closer is more holy than that, and I don't want you coming any closer. It should be that way. Why is the lav before the asay? Says the Or HaChaim, an unbelievable little line. Throughout the Torah, God is more makpid. He cares more about the lavin than he does on an asay. A lav, he will tell you, you absolutely cannot do. But an asay, sometimes you have to do. Like Pesach Hamila, but usually, if you can, you can, and if you don't, you don't. It's an opportunity that if you miss it, you miss it. That's what it ends up becoming. So first, he was still told, don't come any closer. That's the lav. That's the most important thing I want here, says Kadosh Baruch Hu. I don't want you coming any closer at all. That's the first thing you have to watch out for. Then he was told what he could and should do, telling him that he should take off his shoes. We still have to know why he had already told him, why didn't he tell him to take off his shoes earlier, whatever it was, but it could be that it didn't become holy until that place. But again, two areas over here. Number one, don't come any closer. That's because it's a lav. And then the asay is, since you're already in a holy place, take off your shoes. What are you going to say before Yaakov?
Number two, when he went up to the Torah, has he not even taken off the shoes?
I don't know if he had shoes on at all. Not so sure. I mean, that it doesn't say, there's nothing over there. Now, we have to understand what it means to take off your shoes. I mean, the literal translation is great, and up until now we've been dealing with that, but now we're going to go with completely different perushim. We're trying to understand what would be. Number one, Pardes Yosef. I'm sorry? I have already destroyed Dr. Scholes. I decided that they're the worst shoes in the world as they started to warp. I will just tell everybody, and this is on tape right now, Dr. Scholes' shoes warps and in snow, and they destroy your foot. So, do not buy Dr. Scholes' shoes, even if they are cheaper. It is not worth it. That is officially. The pads are good. Yeah, the shoes are terrible. Pardes Yosef says, the removal of one's shoe represents the removal of your ego out of a situation, as if to say, my feet aren't worthy of stepping in your presence. I don't deserve to be there. That's what it means by taking off your shoes. It means I don't deserve to be here, which is why they used to do it by kings. Rav Hirsch adds on, the point of taking off shoes represents total commitment to the significance and the kedusha of that area. It implies that you intend to base your entire personality on that place. Similarly, the Kohanim serving in the base of Mikdash went barefoot. Not only because of a chatzitza, because they wanted to attach themselves to the makom that was holy. They wanted to keep themselves sanctified by it, and therefore they had to be connected to it, so they took off their shoes. The shoes is a disconnect. Their feet touching the ground would be a direct connection that's there. But now we're going to go into a little bit more. Rabbi Abachaya says the word shal. Shal ne'alecha comes from the word shalila, which means to remove and take away from. What he means to say is he took away his gashmias, his physicality, entirely away from his body. Just like a shoe is stuck to his foot, to your foot, physicality, chumrias, gashmias, is stuck to your body. The Malbim explains this concept, that the only way Moshe could come to the level of Nebuah that he had to get to, we all know that Moshe Rabbeinu was on a very high level of Nebuah, the only way for him to get to that level, to take Bnei Yisrael out, to give them the Torah, to do everything that they had, the only way for him to do it is for him to leave his body behind. He would have to become a spiritual person, a ruchni person, who could leave his body on the ground and spend 40 days and 40 nights in Shemayim with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If he's able to do that, then good. That's why it's called a na'al. Na'al is a covering. A covering that covers up something else. And thus, it refers to the body over the soul. The body is the covering for the neshama so that it doesn't get sullied. What were you going to say?
A na'al is a cover or it's a lock?
Na'al is a lock, right. But now is shoe, right? What we're using over here. Yeah, it is a covering, something to cover up the shoe and the foot. The shoe and arm. That's a good hand, I mean, because it also means a glove. That's a good question. I don't know why it's connected to a lock. I'm sure you could, you know, an etymologist would probably be able to do it.
An etymologist that somehow locks up.
I don't know. That's a very good call. But, I mean, you can apply it to this situation. It locks up the soul from getting dirtied. If the soul came down to this earth by itself, then it would get sullied by all the garbage and the muck and all the garbage that this corporal world has to offer. Now that we have a body that does all the dirty work for it, the neshama is able to be taken away. It's literally able to step back, says the Malbim, from the garbage of the world. The neshama is able to survive while the body takes on all the garbage. That's the concept, says the Malbim, what's going on. Chazal tell us, an unbelievable little thing, that this is the point of chalitza. What happens by chalitza? Okay, a guy dies, and her brother-in-law, has to do either Yibam or Chalitza. Yibam is he marries her. That's if she has no kids, obviously. And Chalitza is what? What happens? Well, that spit in the shoe, but he has to. But how do you do it? You have to take off his shoe. That's Chalitzas Hanau, taking off the shoe, spitting in front of him. Chalitzas Hanau is taking off the shoe. She spits in front of him. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a shoe that they had back then, right?
But nowadays, I thought there's a Chalitza shoe.
Because we don't use those shoes anymore, but the Chalitza shoe is just the shoe that we use for Chalitza. Chalitza means to take off the shoe. That's what it is. Chalitza literally means to be holy, to take off. Yeah, I mean, in theory, but the problem is there has to be strings. She has to untie it. But there has to be that. See, let's try to understand. The point of Yibam, and the reason why the brother-in-law gets married, is to bring his brother back into the world. If his brother died early, usually that means he needs a tikkun, some type of a fixing up. Says the Malbim, the point of Yibam is to marry the brother, marry that sister-in-law of yours, give birth to a child, call the child by the name of the deceased brother of her ex-husband. The child will be known by that name, and he is supposed to come back within that child. That person who had passed away, the brother who had passed away, comes back within the child. When you decide not to do that, you're not giving a body to your brother. You're not allowing your brother to come back into the world. What that is you're taking off the shoe, the body from your brother that your brother can come back, and you're not allowing his neshama to come back. So it's the same concept, says the Malbim, of the idea of taking off, the idea of the shoe representing the body. The neshama of the Yavam is the idea of giving birth to the next kid, and that's the idea behind what Chalitza now is all about. The Netziv says it a bit differently, but the same type of context. By Chalitza, the Yavam is showing that he's not giving in to his base desires to marry any girl he sees. Even though his sister-in-law may be a good-looking girl, he's not going to marry her, because he says, I don't want to just give in to my desires. That's what it means. And what he's really doing is he's doing L'shem Shemayim, he's taking off his shoe, showing him that he's a more spiritual person. I'm not giving in to the desires of my body. I'm letting my soul rule over me. And that's the concept. Now, normal people can do that once in a while. Once in a while, we can take away our taivas, take off our shoe, so to speak, and we can live spiritual lives. The chiddush of Moshe Rabbeinu, what Hashem was telling Moshe Rabbeinu over here, is take off your shoes forever. It meant lose your body for the rest of your life. For the rest of your life, Moshe Rabbeinu, you cannot live a normal physical existence. You can't be together with your wife. Moshe Rabbeinu was not together with his wife for the rest of his life. You can't be together with other people. You're not going to live a normal existence that everybody else will have. You're going to be separated, literally separated from the rest of the people out there. And that, says the Netziv and the Malbim and Rabbeinu Bechaya, that's what they're trying to say. You are removed from the world permanently. You're gone. You're already Kadosh Moshe. You've already worked on yourself. You've already become a good person. Now take it to a higher level. Become greater than that. And Moshe Rabbeinu accepted it wholeheartedly and became exactly what was B'simcha Rabbah. He understood what he had to do over here. Now, why by Moshe? Why by Moshe Rabbeinu? Does it say the word ne'alecha? Shal ne'alecha me'al reglecha. Your shoes, plural. But by Yoshua, the same line is used. And it says, shal ne'alcha me'al reglecha. Why is it only ne'alcha as in singular? What's the difference that by Moshe Rabbeinu it's plural, and by Yoshua it's singular? So, number one, the Zohar. Zohar says this is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu separating from his wife. Remember, this is the whole problem that Miriam and Aaron asked about in Parshas Balosko. They spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu and said, why is Moshe Rabbeinu separating from his wife? They couldn't understand what he was doing. Yeshua was not required to do so. Yeshua was never told to separate from his wife. He wasn't going to be on the level of Nebuah that Moshe Rabbeinu was, where God could speak to him at any moment in time. Yeshua was spoken to at specific moments when HaKadosh Baruch Hu warns him that he's going to be spoken to. So Yeshua was told, you don't have to separate from your wife. So when it says it in plural, it means not only take off your shoes, but also separate from your wife, Moshe Rabbeinu, while Yeshua was not told to do so. You should know, by the way, the Zohar says that at that moment that he told Moshe Rabbeinu to separate from his wife, Michoel, we all know Michoel is the Malach, cried out loud and made Har Sinai shake and said, how can that be? Man was created with a woman for a reason. Bracha is only found by a married couple. How could you make Moshe Rabbeinu separate from his wife? Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said back, this is what the Zohar says, Moshe was already Mekayim Puravu. He had already done Puru Revu by having two sons. Apparently, he held like Beis Shammai, that you can only have two sons, and that's Puru Revu. Now, he has to be married to the Shekhinah. Now, he has a requirement of being married to the Shekhinah. And Moshe Rabbeinu's life from now on was where he is connected to the Shekhinah and not another human being. That's what that's where he was at, and that was that. That's answer number one. If you look at your sheet number two, we're about to turn the page. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says, again, it refers to taking off different levels. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to be on a higher spiritual level than anybody else. He was told to take off more and more levels. Ne'alecha. Take off one shoe and then the other. Take off more things. While Yoshua was only told, take off a little bit. I just want you to be a little bit more spiritual, Yoshua. I don't need you to be completely. Apparently, it's as easy as taking off your shoe. Taking off your shoe is making yourself more spiritual. The idea behind it of making yourself more kadosh. The Malbim explains it again. There's two parts to the soul's covering. There's the body, and then the imagination that a person has that connects your soul to your body. There's an imagination that we have in which we can think of things that allows us to be one way or the other. All Nevi'im, and we all know this, right? When they have a vision of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to say, what happens in their vision? What happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them a vision? So we all know that the Nevi'im are sleeping, or they're in a sleep-like trance, or whatever you want to call it. And while they're in this sleep-like trance, and they're thinking of what it is, they see an image projected in their head, and they use their imagination based on what they've seen in this world, and they project what Hashem is trying to tell them into images in front of them, and then they have to translate that and give that to the people. That's what a Navi has to do. A Navi is never told a direct statement. It's not what they're told. A Navi is not told anything directly. A Navi is told things indirectly where they have to translate and do it there. There are schools for Navia in order to figure out what to do when it comes to prophecy. Schools to be able to do so. Yoshua could not remove his imagination. By definition, he was a Navi who needed his imagination in order to prophesy. That was absolutely necessary for him. But what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? What was Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy like? Anybody remember what it was called?
Face-to-face.
Aspak, that is called Panim al Panim. It's called Aspaklaria HaMe'ira. An absolute clarity, where he was told direct statements by God. This is what I want you to say to the people. Kosomaro b'nei Yisrael. This is what you should say to the people. Not an image or a vision that you have to translate. You don't need your imagination, Moshe Rabbeinu. You no longer need it. You no longer need anything in this physical world. I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to know. And when you need to see something, I will show you what you need to know. You want to understand the new moon? How the new moon works? I'll show it to you. You want to understand which animals are kosher? I'll show it to you. You want to understand what the Chatzis Shekel looks like? I'll show it to you. You want to know what the menorah looks like? I'll show it to you. I'll show it to you directly. I will give you that. You don't need your imagination anymore. So Moshe Rabbeinu was told, not only remove your body, your physical taivas and your pleasures from this world. Not only that, like Yoshua, take away your physical pleasures. More than that, Moshe Rabbeinu, remove your imagination. No longer do you need to look at the world and think about things in this world. Your thought process should only be kulo me. That's all you should think about. That's it, and there's nothing else there, and that's the two shoes that Moshe Rabbeinu was taking off. Now, Kli Yakar adds on to this a little bit. Moshe Rabbeinu was the sun to Yoshua's moon. He explains that the moon, although it's lit up on one side, on the other side, it's completely dark, and we all know that, right? What that means is, in one way, Yoshua was disconnected from this physical world. But in another way, he was totally connected to it because he had a wife. He seems to only have had kids after he went to Eretz Yisrael. Yoshua was barren until he met Rachav HaZona. He married Rachav HaZona, and then he had girls after that. Which means he didn't have kids until after God was already giving him visions. Which meant, although on one side he was highly spiritual, but he was just the moon, on the other side he was physical as well. So he had both. While Moshe Rabbeinu was an entire sun. He was only kulo or, all light. He had no gashmias at all. Once he saw Kadosh Baruch Hu, from that moment on, he had nothing to do with this world at all. Completely separate. Unlike any other human being that has ever existed, and unlike every other human being that will ever exist. Moshe Rabbeinu was the sun that was completely different, and that's why the ground underneath him was holy. That's the reason why he had to be off with his shoes.
Moshe, the only person to have seen God in his first instance through a...
There's no question, yeah.
No.
You should know, it's a machlokas. It's a machlokas. Not the first time. Gidon also saw God through a vision, right? But it was a little bit different of a vision, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared through almost like a malach. But there was something similar where Gidon had a malach appear to him at the threshing floor. But there wasn't a sudden nevuah that brought him up to the highest level of nevuah like this. This was a jump beyond any jump that you can imagine. Nothing was like that. I'm sorry?
Ishmael Kohen Gadol, didn't he also see something?
Ishmael Kohen Gadol never was a Navi. Not in that way.
What about that Gemara?
Well, even then, even what he saw, he was able to see things that were a little bit beyond. He was able to see what you would call maybe the Shechina, which was a representation of what God had. But to have a direct Nevuah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not the same. If anything, people could point out, I mean, there's a lot of different instances where Nevi'im had awesome stuff. But it seems to be all in a trance more than anything else. What's up,
Aaron? Also passed by the burning bush?
No. Aaron was no shaitas to it. He didn't come to meet him until they got to the Malone, which was much, much later. Additionally, says Rav Schwab, Moshe was different in that the Shechina came to him. He never went to the Shechina. The Shechina said, I will come to you at any other point. There is no such thing. And that's Al Tikrav alone. You don't have to come here. I'll go to you. Yeah, what are you going to say?
Eliyahu
HaNavi became on a high level. Not in Nevuah, however, but in closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Nevuah, nobody compares what Moshe Rabbeinu came to. Even when you say that he went up to Shemayim alive, still is not comparable to what he had. Let's look at the Avi Ezri. The Avi Ezri is the greatest. You know, I'll tell you, when you talk about Bechira, free will, the point of life is to lose your free will. That is the point of life. Meaning, I hope that none of us have the issue that when we walk by a light switch on Shabbos, you have the desire to turn it on or turn it off. You know that on Shabbos, you can't turn on or off the light. It's not even a choice anymore. If somebody would pay me $1,000, $1,000,000 to turn off a light on Shabbos, I wouldn't do it. I know the $1,000,000 would be like, well, I don't know, maybe I'll get a heter and I'll do it with the Shino. No. Somebody's going to pay me even $1,000,000. I'm not going to turn off or on a light. Okay, it's not going to happen.
Thank you, $318 million.
Then I know the rest of my life is I've just given into the self and I'm going to die. So yeah, that's not happening. It's not going to happen. I'd rather keep my life as it is, even though I'm very, very poor. But it would be amazing if somebody came up to me and offered that to me, because I would have a story for the rest of my life. That would be awesome, because now I'm guaranteed $318 million for everything else out there. But either way, regardless, right, everybody knows that. I mean, it's just there. We no longer have that. I no longer have the desire at all to go into a McDonald's and go buy a hamburger, a cheeseburger. It's just not there. It's not in my mode. It's not like it's a bakira. I pass by McDonald's and I'm like, stop! It doesn't happen. I'm beyond that level. I'm beyond that level.
If that ever occurs to you,
yeah.
Can you call, I'll do it, and
you'll do
it.
No, I'm not going to call it. The Avi Ezri says, if a child is offered candy or a $100 bill. Even though, obviously, a $100 bill can buy tons of candy, the kid is going to take the candy. There's no question. He doesn't realize how great the $100 bill is. But if the candy gives him a toothache, then I don't care if it's a candy versus a penny. That kid is going to take the penny. Why is he going to take the penny? Because he knows that the candy hurts him. That's if he realizes that it's there. See, when you realize what Torah is the $100 bill, just the $100 bill, while the candy is the taivas of this world, the pleasures that you have in this world. It shouldn't be a choice. Torah allows you to have all the pleasures of the world, just not here, just later on. When you grow up, you'll realize what the Torah is able to do to you. This is a $100 bill. You just don't realize it yet. You give in to the taivas because it's there. But if you see that the taivas are bad for you, that it destroys you, it gives you a toothache, a headache, it destroys your body, when you see that, then automatically you'll start turning the other way. The point is to move your Bechira to the point where you no longer are choosing anything. It's automatic that you get up for chakras. It's automatic that you make brachas on food. It's automatic that you bench, that you daven 3 times a day, that you keep Shabbos, that you do anything. That's the point of Bechira, to lead you to a point where it's no longer there, says the Avi Ezri. This idea is what we're talking about over here. The idea is that Moshe Rabbeinu was told, Shal Nalacha, take off your shoes, says the Avi Ezri, lose your Bechira. Take away all Bechira. Take away your Bechira and realize what you have a choice of, what you can do. This is what I'm offering you. Make the right decision. Says Tehillim Yudchet Pasuk Daled, Choshati Durachai Vashiv Ragli Alein Vosecha. I wanted to go somewhere, but my legs kept leading me to the Beis Medrash, said Zevin HaMelech. He wanted to go somewhere, but he lost his Bechira. He wanted to do sins. He wanted to do something wrong, but he no longer had the ability to. His legs led him straight to the Beis Medrash. This is the exact opposite of Paro. Paro lost his Bechira to say the right thing. Paro lost his Bechira to do what's good for him and for all of Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu was the exact opposite. Now, I've got a lot of other reasons. I'm going to run through these over here. Yalkut Reuveni, by the way, says, is the reason why he had to lose his body is because he was touched by Bithya, the daughter of Paro. And because she had touched him, he now had to get rid of that body and make another body for himself. Pretty crazy, right? That's by Bithya Bas Paro. Das the Kingdom says, Yoshua had already acquired the area before Hashem had gotten there. He was there first. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu was coming to an area where God already was, so he had to take off more shoes. The Lekach Tov says Moshe wasn't Zocha to two things. He wasn't allowed into Eretz Yisrael, and he wasn't Zocha to see his children follow in his footsteps. Yoshua was allowed to go to Eretz Yisrael, even though his children didn't follow in his footsteps. He took off one shoe. He had one bad thing. Moshe Rabbeinu had two bad things. Rabbeinu Ephraim has five answers altogether. Five answers. Number one, Moshe grew up among Mitzrayim, Egyptians, and Midianim. He had terrible hashkafos that he had to get rid of, says Rabbi Noah Fine. While Yeshua grew up among Jews, he was a prince, and thus he was told not to get rid of everything. He had to get rid of a little bit, but Moshe Rabbeinu had to get rid of a lot to go on the level that he was. Another answer, Moshe was a shepherd and wore many pairs of shoes. I don't know why shepherds wear a lot of pairs of shoes. Maybe someone who's a shepherd could explain that to me. Because what?
They walk in all, right, right?
Walk in all these areas. While Yeshua only wore, he was royalty, only wore one nice pair. He's told to take off your one pair of shoes. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take off all of your pairs of shoes. That's cute, right? He's walking around, yeah.
Rock climbing shoes when they went up in the rocks.
Well, those are awesome.
Those shoes when it was like snowing.
That's pretty cool. So he had all those shoes out there. Number seven, Moshe had both of his feet in a Makom Kadosh. Yoshua only had one foot in the Makom Kadosh, and therefore he was only told to take off one shoe. Number eight, this was the first prophecy that Moshe had ever received. So he needed to get rid of a ton of tumah to be at this level. Yoshua had already received prophecies before, therefore he didn't have to take off, because he didn't have to take off as much beforehand. Number nine, Moshe was visited by Hashem himself. He had to take off more physicality. Yoshua was visited by a malach, and that's the idea. So we're going to skip down, guys. A very worried mother. Yeah, what's up?
The fact that Moshe was the only one who stopped by the burning bush, mm-hmm. Isn't that enough of a fact that he shouldn't have to take off his shoes? Because no one else.
I mean, it was on Har Sinai in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
That's the reason why. But there's no one else there. It's in the middle of nowhere. Har Sinai is in the middle of nowhere in the Sinai Peninsula, which is all desert. So that's the reason why no one stopped to see it. There was no one else around to go see that area. That would be the idea. I'm going to tell two more Divrei Torah over here. We have them both on the bottom. In Avos Perek Beis Mishnah Yud, we are told to be careful of the Chachamim, because their bite is a snake bite. Their sting is a scorpion sting. And their, I don't know what to say, their lechisha, their poison, is the poison of a saraf, of a very poisonous snake. So they have three bechinos, nishicha, akitza, and lechisha, the Rosh Yitzhakas of which are na'al. So when Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take off his now, take off your shoe, and then take away those bad things that you could give to other people. Moshe Rabbeinu, if you curse somebody, that curse will be unbelievably potent. Be very careful. Don't curse anyone. That's what he's told to take off his shoe. Don't come anywhere near cursing anybody. That's the bad thing to do. And then we're going to end with this. A very worried mother came to Rabbi Yitzchok Zilberstein and told him that his son was in the army. I think the thing, I couldn't really translate the word. I think the bomb defusement unit. What's the unit that takes care of bombs?
Bomb squad.
Bomb squad. Yeah, but what did they call something?
Engineering unit. Combat engineers.
Combat engineers. That's what it was called. So I don't know what they were calling it in there. Obviously,
the guys who clear minefields.
That's the people. So obviously, it's extremely dangerous, right? Obviously, it's extremely dangerous.
Unit that most people desire not to be.
Yeah, of course. So the mother said she was very, very worried about her son. Said, what could he do to save himself from tragedy? She asked Rabbi Yitzchok Zilberstein. So he brought down the Sefer Edus Bihosek that asks, it's a terrible tzakana, it's danger, to walk around barefoot in the middle of the desert because of snakes and scorpions, right? To the point where someone who does so, you walk around in the desert without shoes on, you're considered somebody who's committing suicide. Because it's a dumb thing to do, you're definitely going to be bitten. So how could Hashem have commanded Moshe to do that over here? How could he do that? So he answers, what? But why would he command him to do something which is sakana? Why do something which is an absolute danger?
He turned his staff into a poisonous snake. I'm assuming that
and he ran away from it. And he ran away from it. Notice that. So he says, because this area was a makom kadosh, it was like Yerushalayim, where in Pirkei Avos it says, one of the miracles that happened in Yerushalayim is that no snakes ever have bitten anyone to kill them in Yerushalayim. It's never happened. Even though there are yellow scorpions all over the place. No one has died. I can't say this for sure, but at the time, no one ever died from a scorpion or a snake bite in Yerushalayim because it's a makom kadosh. It's a holy place. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu was in a makom kadosh. And if he's a makom kadosh, he doesn't have to worry about snakes and scorpions. So Rabbi Yitzchok Zilberstein said to the worried mother, said, if your son makes the ground he's standing on kadosh, if he makes that area kadosh by doing holy things in that area, learning Torah, davening, wherever he goes, Hashem will make sure that he'll be fine wherever he goes. That's the concept. If you make the makom that you're in a makom kadosh, nothing bad can happen to you there. And that should apply to every single one of us. It's not just for a guy who's in the... Tell me again, what is it? The
Combat engineers.
I'm going to write that down. It's not just the people that are in combat engineering. That's not the only people that are there. Every place we go, how do you know that nothing's going to happen to you there? If you make the makom that you're standing in a makom kadosh, if it's a holy place, nothing bad can happen to you there. That's the concept. Keep that in mind, whatever you do, and then you'll be able to go somewhere. So stop with that for right now.
The terrorist came in and shot all those kids.
You don't want to say anything like that. You can't answer when something specific happens. You can't answer specific instances or circumstances. I'm telling you, I'm not talking about people like that. I'm saying to you, for whatever happened over there, after the fact, after something happens, you can't say this is the reason why that happened. Constitution, you can't say something like that.
I mean,
for us,
it would be better if the problem was just like, just cut right.
For us, we have to know, make it a makom kadosh, and it'll be better. We'll stop at that.